Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Brian Brushfire Brushwood.
I used to have two hands.
No. Yeah, you have to tune into Journey Quest to find out what happened there if you don't know. Gentlemen, so a couple interesting things. We had we were talking a little bit earlier on Weird Things about the Apple announcing their AR kit, which is if you're a developer and you want to develop applications that use augmented reality. And that's growing. We've talked a little before, I think like I think it was Project Jupiter or what I think Google has really good room sensing stuff. And just to make a point, really cool AR means that your device, your goggles, your glasses, your phone or whatever can sense the room around you. So it's not just you just pivot your camera or your screen around and you see it. You move forward or backwards, it moves with you. And you guys have been, you know, as HTC Vive owners, you guys have experienced this firsthand and how much more engrossing that kind of VR is. And sometimes people try, like they'll do like Google Cardboard, be like, oh yeah, that's cool how I turn around and you look at that and it's like, yes, but when you're room sensing, you step 2 feet forward and it's like real life stepping 2 feet forward and you have that whoa moment.
Well, and that's one of those things that I point out, you know, my wife is a studio artist and she has never experienced binocular vision. She only has one good eye. The other one is just basically she could see light and dark and that's it. And yet she understands the difference. You know, when she gets into the Vive, she still has an amazing experience. And that's because her entire life, she experiences 3D, but not from the strange way we do, where at any given time, either the foreground or background, there's two copies of them. She experiences it through parallax, through motion indicating these cues of how deep everything goes. And the idea, you know, the fact of AR bringing true parallax and room scale on the Vive, bringing true parallax is phenomenal.
Yeah. I think that we're entering a very, very cool place. What's exciting, I thought, was that because we've talked about, like, I made, you know, fun of the gaming backpack kind of thing because I'm like, my position was we're fast approaching the point where the processors and chips are getting faster. And that Apple is able to do all this on board with their existing hardware is a really, really good sign for what's going to be coming down the pipeline. Because if you can use off the shelf, well, they're custom, but if Apple can use their existing iPhones and iPads to do this, that means that, you know, next generation Android phones or current ones, some of the ones with the faster systems, should be capable of doing this really cool room sensing kind of stuff, which then means that we're going to get better, cooler tech much faster. And we talked a bit about, you know, one of the things we talked about was like trying to explore what were the cool things you could do in AR. And Brian and Justin brought up their experience playing the VR game, the Star Trek Bridge Command game, and how you look at how popular tabletop games are in gaming, where you could have a different category of game, which we saw to an extent in this demo, which we've seen before when Microsoft showed the HoloLens, they showed Minecraft on a table. And that's, I think that, you know, I think it's going to start with these tabletop games because two or three developers could develop something really awesome. You know, Minecraft is a game primarily, you know, one guy, you know, picked up sort of the abandoned code project of somebody else and developed this amazing, you know, game that's become a billion-dollar franchise. We're going to see that. We are going to see new empires built by small teams, two guys, two girls, two people with an idea, some imagination, and the willingness to dive into this. I've seen on my own, you know, experience how much easier it is to dive into a lot of these development tools now. I'm a guy that, you know, has very little programming background, but I found that with a little bit of work, you can start to understand. Like I had, you know, 3 years ago or 2 years ago when I had my Oculus, you know, a day after I had it, I was in, you know, I think it was Unreal going in there and making, you know, 3D environments. And not knowing anything about coding and other than just following tutorials, and somebody who's smarter and more dedicated is going to create some really, really cool stuff. I'm excited. And it's for individual creators. It's a great point.
Yeah. That's one of the Peter Diamandis' book, Bold. He talks about, like, if you're building a new business, 10 years ago, you should have done what Google did and build a business assuming that eventually storage will be free, because that's what the numbers are trending towards. And sure enough, as a result, Google was able to make these insane bets where they bought used hard drives, and they, you know, because, and sure enough, the cost did eventually go essentially to free, and now there's free storage and stuff online. And he goes on to say, you know, assume now that if you're building a business that that essentially computing power is free and unlimited, and build your platform based on that hypothesis, because if we're not there now, we're going to get there. And it seems to me like certainly AR is such a curious niche of the technological world that that it will reward the truly big thinkers who think, you know, there's no way this will work today, but there'll be a time that we will have this power and we could do X, Y, and Z, and that's why I'm getting started now.
You know, sometimes it's being just being a few months ahead. You know, Instagram became huge, even though you looked at it and you're first like, this feels like sort of a scaled down Flickr, you know, and then you're on your iPhone and you're like, oh, well, that's cool. I guess it makes me, my, you know, when the cameras weren't so good on mobile phones, yeah, it makes the photo look cooler. And oh yeah, I can like my friends' photos and yeah, they can like my stuff. And next thing you know, you have a huge social network that was at the confluence of phones getting cameras.
Right.
And I think that if you're a game developer, if you're somebody who likes tabletop or card games, just doesn't think of yourself as a programmer, you know what? You can dive in right now in a couple months, be building stuff.
Agreed.
You know? And so I want to encourage anybody who's thinking about doing that, game development, whatever, is like, yeah, think about AR, think about this. As Brian points out, that right now it's like, well, it's, yeah, when you've got the two giants, Google and Apple behind it, Microsoft is into it. When you've got these platforms and are now saying we support it, Apple's come out and says, yeah, AR kit's a thing, you can develop for this. That means we're going to be seeing some amazing stuff. And again, what ARKit is, what's cool about that is you've seen the stuff where you aim your phone at like a little code or some symbol and it makes the image float on top of this. ARKit says you don't need that code or symbol. It just looks at the room or environment around you and creates its own 3D map of where you are, allowing you to place objects and stuff around there, which...
Which, again, I mean, these are great developer examples mm-hmm. to show... Like to stress test, okay, this is what you do. These are the parameters. For those of you looking at those demos and being like, well, what? I mean, I don't know. How many times am I going to need to put a lamp next to a fake cup of coffee? That sounds dumb. Like, this is literally just a test of that tech, and we have not seen it to this level with this kind of ubiquity in any way prior to what we saw today, which is yeah. rad.
I'll tell you what. A hypothetical example. Let's say that, you know, we sat around and we said, you know what would be really cool? It would be kind of a tabletop game where we fight dinosaurs against each other. Okay. Now, very soon, we're going to see probably plugins for ARKit into Unity and Unreal, which are these game engines, which are very accessible for people to learn how to develop in. We could go in there and say, okay, we figure out our gameplay. We could go into the environment and we can say, okay, and, you know, in an hour, we can create our field. We can create all the little details we need there. And then we can just download 3D dinosaurs from a library. We could buy the 3D dinosaurs. We could buy those. We could program them with simple mechanics for what they behave, what they do. There's so much stuff that's already out there and built into it. It is an amazing, you can rapidly develop really, really cool stuff. The assets even, you can buy the assets. We can say, well, let's give our dinosaurs their own look. This stuff is not, it seems, it's, for many people listening, it may sound, oh, that sounds really, it's, trust me, it's easier than so many other things. You know, there's so much documentation. There's never been this much tutorial, never this much instructions on how to do this. I'm just excited because, you know, there seemed to be a time where those two-person, three-person coding teams were going away. You know, you hear about these kind of, you know, indie titles, and then you get, you know, along comes Notch and then, you know, Mojang. And next thing you know, you have a phenomenon because it wasn't yeah. about making the most complex multi-role environment. It was about the gameplay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Twitch JC is saying, are the calculations being done to build a 3D environment on the phone or remotely?
On the phone.
Applications. Yeah, it's on the phone.
It's all on the phone. It's all on the phone. And it, you know, your modern phone has an accelerometer, so it can tell its position, you know, where it's rotating around. The key part is then to figure out how it's moved. As Brian talked about the parallax, where you are positionally in this space as you move around. And by creating a depth map or mapping the room around you, which is what Google's been doing a lot with and Apple's been doing a lot with, it's all handled on board. We'll see how much battery drain, how much the toll is going to be on that. But the next step is you start building dedicated chips and processors for doing that, which decrease the instruction sets and how you do that. And so what a time to, you know, be creative. What a time to be a creative. Okay. You know. And don't be afraid to do it. I've been testing my little project Tiny Dot Shop, which I don't know if I've talked about that much at all.
I don't think you have.
Individually I've talked. But so Tiny Dot Shop is, I wanted to create a very easy way for anybody who wanted to basically create your own little shop if you wanted to do Amazon affiliate stuff or if you wanted to sell something you sold on PayPal. And what tiny dot shop, it's tiny dot shop. That's the full URL. You get your own. If you just sign in with Twitter, it's really easy. You can sign in like 20 seconds and it creates an account, pulls in your Twitter avatar, pulls in all that stuff. So you don't have to fill anything out and you can go into add an item. So you go to the bottom and it's a work in process. It's extremely beta, but you click on the bottom and you add an item like, you know, I'll go in and add like bold. I type in like bold, you know, the book. And the next thing you know, I've got that added to my tiny shop and we'll probably be using it for like weird things. It's just an easy place to find all that. Cause it started from the fact that I thought like, man, you know, we've made hundreds of book recommendations on this show, but they don't all live in any particular place.
Yep.
So what I've been doing with this is I reached a point where like, you know, I have a lot of things I need to improve and it's hard to communicate to people what to do and how to use it when you're in a vacuum. So it was last week was after the show as I actually went on Periscope and said, hey guys, help me bug test this thing, you know, help me figure this thing out and also help me figure out how to explain it. And so I spent about an hour and a half on Periscope. Then after that, I made a, you know, like a 1 minute video to explain how to use it, you know, and it's an iterative process. And I guess that my lesson I learned was, you know, I want to have something be perfect, but I also know that I can spend so much time going back and forth on decisions. I just don't know. I don't have the answer.
That's the that's the Brian Tracy conundrum that's always stuck with me. He says the biggest mistake people make in business is doing extremely well that which need not be done at all. And so it's like, you know, getting caught into bells and whistles and minutiae is an easy trap to fall into.
So you're in there, by the way. I created it where you can add stuff in and then all of your hashtags become these selections you can choose and you can create a collection. So I created a collection called Learning Magic. And if you click on Learning Magic, you'll see that I've listed in there Scam School and other stuff like I think are great resources. And so I wanted to make this because you get these questions like, hey, you know, what are your books do you recommend? Or what do you recommend to this? Or what do you like there? And so it's a place to sort of put all of that together. And, you know, we'll see how it works out. I found it very personally useful for me so far because I've had a couple people, you know, they ask me the same questions over and over again. But
yeah. No, I get a lot of that for tours of the home studio to book recommendations. Like, you know, you spend 10 years spouting off about the stuff you've read. You're lucky if you hold a quarter of that at the end of that time. And people are like, what are all the books I should read? And I'm like,
Well, I've been doing this now where I had somebody ask me that. I literally said, oh, and the easiest thing was for me to actually pull it out. And just pull it up like, oh, cool. And somebody's like, oh, can you send me like, yeah, I'll send you a link to all of my because like people ask me about my setup. And I said, like, I have a page, my podcasting setup, which is my microphone, my foam, all this sort of stuff. And that became a very, you know, and we'll see. So, you know, what's nice is that what you can do with this is if you have an Amazon affiliate account, you make money when somebody clicks through and buys it. If you want to sell an item, a PayPal item, you can combine stuff. Like I can put in Shopify item. I just paste in my Shopify URL from a particular item. And it's automatically in my tiny shop. So I can combine anything from any other store, just paste in. There's even a bookmarklet that will do that. So, it's like creating your own little small business recommending stuff is the way I look at it versus when you do that with other places, it's like, you know, you do it for them. So If you guys try it, if you have any feedback, let me know. Again, I'm trying to it's opaque, it's not clear, it's not obvious. I'm in that rough phase where I'm just trying to figure out how to communicate, how to build a good, what's important to me versus, like, I had these ideas for features and exactly what Brian said. Like, I'm like, well, I could do really cool collaborative shops and things like this and that. I'm like, I got to make the basic thing simple. I got to make people understand. It's great that I know how to use it, but I made it. Right. So, you know, but it was fun watching people. I've watched several people go use it and come and figured some of the features out, which was cool.
Yeah, no, I think you did it right. You opened it up to a group of people that are predisposed to A, like, interact with it, but also will let you know where, you know, they're confused, you know?
Yeah.
They'll come back to you with good feedback.
Yeah, so it's been a fun experience. And so
And let me also just say this about this project. You know, this is something that I know, you know, more so than Andrew was even, you know, saying he's been, you know, working on and obsessing about. And I've been really, really, really impressed with where it's come, because it's super functional. And having a place where, you know, I can literally, I've had Brian, I'm sure, same thing. You've had just people ask about, what's your podcasting setup? Right? Like all these, you know, kind of questions. Now there can be a place where it can all just sort of live.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I look at it for, if you're starting off doing a YouTube or a podcast and you're looking for ways to make money on what you're doing, that's sort of part of this was too, was like a lot of us do recommendations and picks. It's like, you know, the idea is to go create a tiny.shop and you can give out that URL. Say, hey, if you want to see our picks or recommendations, so we used, cause like Weird Things, we say go to weirdthings.com, but we've got, you know, we've got probably 300 or 400 book recommendations spread across that many posts, which is impossible or whatever. And I'm sure I could find some WordPress plugin or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I just wanted to create this a unified place for my recommendations and stuff. And so it's like kind of like a mini little business. It's a great companion if you're a podcaster or a YouTuber and you want to make, how do you capitalize on this? So, you know, that's the key, is just to keep, you know, iterating on that and that, to figure out how to explain to people. Because I've had some people go, oh, I get it now, you know, but.
So, you know who I am going to tell about this is David Rowan does the podcast Minimum, and the way he makes a few shekels out of it is, you know, he talks about, like, this guest was on this show, and he takes the 90-minute interview and basically gives a 3 to 4 minute synopsis and breaks it down for you. And then at the end, he says, if you want to read their book, it's at, and he gives a bit.ly link that I'm certain goes through an affiliate code. And so I'm sure right now he's having to be awfully hands-on with all that. But if there's an easy way to, you know, put his affiliate code stink on it, I'm sure he'd take you up.
Yeah. So it's you, when you create your account, you go into settings and you just paste in your Amazon affiliate code once, and every product that you put up that has an Amazon affiliate code, it adds in there. And I'm working on trying to figure out how to integrate other systems that do affiliate codes. So it does that automatically. And so, yeah. And if he's interested, I'd love to talk to him too, because he's a great example of me to understand what his needs are, you know, so I could go like, okay, how do I make a great product for him? You know, because there's one thing is for me, I made a cool thing for me, and now I'm trying to figure out how to make it worthwhile for Justin and Brian, and then how do I get a guy like him on board? I would love that. And anybody else out there who's looking to use something, let me know. Tell me, you know, what your ideal is. And but yeah, it's the Amazon affiliate code. Once you plug that in, it's automatic. I don't take any of that. You know, if they don't put an Amazon affiliate code, you know, that'll go to the tiny shop one. So question is how am I going to monetize it? Right now, you know, the monetization on it works where if nobody puts an Amazon affiliate code, it'll go to the tiny shop one, but that's not my big plan for it. You know, really what I want to do is if I can create a really cool system that people go to when they want to save their recommendations and make recommendations and find stuff, and that influencers use to do that, I'm not worried about monetization on it, because trying right now to figure out like different clever ways in which I can, and I've got it, you know, like if you're going in and making recommendations and I know that you really like Brian really likes Justin's book picks, every time Brian logs in, I'm going to say, hey, Justin recommends this book, you know,
right.
They're things that I can do in a non-creepy way and say, yeah, my friends, whatever, can kind of do that. I'm not worried. You know, I think that because it's a, I'm at a point of decision on stuff for people when they want to buy something. That's a wonderful place to be, you know, in the influence world. So, if I can just keep my costs down, you know, like author page has been something that's been growing slowly, organically, whatever. And I just pay for the cost on that because it's a neat experiment, something to do. I don't think I'll ever have huge scale, but that's fine because there's only so many authors. You know, this, if I do it right, it could go somewhere. But in the short term, it solves a problem for me. You know, it just right. solves my yeah. own problem.
No, so. I think that's a really good place to begin is whatever it is you do. And that's one of the things, again, on the Minimum podcast, they were talking about the on Self-Made Man, they had the creator of Saddleback Bags on there, and that was his first thing. He said the first Saddleback bag was he was in Mexico and talked to a tailor and said, I want a bag that does this and that, but also has pockets for these and is double stitched here or whatever. So he made it for himself, and only after everyone kept asking, where can I get one of those, did he realize he was sitting on a business.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think because it's, you know, there's a concept called dog fooding, you know, which is Microsoft would come up with products, but they wouldn't even use them. You know, Google came out with Google Plus, but they didn't want you to go. Google had the initial Android, you know, was a couple years, you know, people were still using the iPhone. And eventually, you know, Android got better and better and better. And so far more Googlers will use Android phones now, but there was a long period of time where they didn't want to use them. And even on a simple thing, if I'm like, well, I want to make a tool that's easy for, you know, podcasters and people like YouTubers or anybody else to save their stuff. If I'm not using it, it's going to be really hard for me to convince other people to.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
So.
Absolutely.
Hey, man, talking about making stuff easy, I got a pick for you. I talked All right. about it on Night Attack, but this is something a lot of folks who are listening to After Things are probably podcasters, people who want to be able to easily distribute their content and have it sound extraordinarily good. And so turns out the guy who pretty much invented podcasting, Adam Curry, has something called the Podcaster Pro. If you go to podcaster.curry.com, you'll find it. But it's an all-in-one kit that plugs in a couple of microphones. It's got a built-in equalizer, a built-in compressor, shows up as an attached sound device on whatever computer you plug it into. And the quality, you know, it's got a noise gate, it's got all the compressor stuff on there. It's fantastic. And you can make me look good if you buy the Brian Brushwood edition that I receive no money from, but it has my signature on it, if that's fun.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah, it sounds very useful.
Absolutely. No, I think this is rad. And I'm excited to see it. The next time I come out to Austin, I want to bug them to take a look at the everything in action.
Yeah.
Justin, you have a pick?
Yeah, you want to know what? Friend of the site, friend of all of us, good old guy, Mikey Newman does a series called Movies with Mikey. That dude put out a Patreon yesterday, and immediately I hate him. Because he's making all the money.
Well, he should. His insights are phenomenal. It's a wonderful product. And
sure. He creates an amazing product, and he's a great writer and a good editor. And his breakdowns of movies have been retweeted by the directors as insightful and excellent commentaries, including James Gunn recently with his Guardians of the Galaxy one. But oh my God, he's made like all the money in the world, and I'm thrilled for him. It is so great, and few people could deserve it better than Mikey.
So let me get this straight. So this guy started, was it YouTube or channel or whatever, and consistently put out a really, really good qualitative product with more insight than a lot of other people were doing, and kept at it for a considerable amount of time to the point that he was getting critical attention from people. The subjects of his talks were liking it, and then he decided to launch a Patreon, and it was successful?
Yeah, man.
There's like a formula there.
Except, yeah. Yeah. Incredibly successful. And yeah, no, it's, you know, Patreon, man. It's a hell of a drug. It's kind of amazing that for so many false starts that I know that we have all been through as new media kind of came out of its shell. It's amazing to kind of be on the wave of something that really, really, really changed the game, like Patreon. You know,
it was pretty fun for us to be so early on that train, and to be, you know, a beneficiary of the early days when nobody really knew how much should a podcast get. Like you saw the numbers, it's all transparent, but it's like, is that a big number or a small number? I don't know.
Well, I think that, and part of the lesson, I think of Patreon is like, you listen to, you know, again, that'll be my, you know, I'll actually have a different pick, but you know, I talk about the attention merchants. And one of the things they talk about is you look at how you have this kind of internet celebrity kind of thing, and you can have millions of views, but yet doesn't mean it's millions of dollars. It does not translate like that. And that's one of the problems. You have people who are, you know, you talk to YouTubers who are known, but they're sharing, you know, a studio apartment and, you know, Hollywood is somebody else, because the amount of revenue they're actually making is very, and I've made this point before, and it kind of gets sort of lost. I'm like, you know, PewDiePie at his height was making as much as one of the stars of Big Bang Theory, you know,
yeah,
which is cool. But that means that there is, you know, 30 or 40 people on TV, which, again, to say in 2017, that's what internet fame could bring. And it makes great money, and he's got an enterprise and all that. But I'm saying this is an interesting thing. People Magazine makes more in advertising money than BuzzFeed does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's so that, but the beautiful thing of Patreon is it came along and said, you know, maybe you've only got 2,000 viewers on our YouTube channel, but maybe they really, really like what you're doing and they'll support you. And instead of trying to just turn their attention into, you know, trying to just turn their attention to some other marketer, maybe the product they want is you and more of you. And Justin and I had conversations about this for years and, you know, thinking what would different models be. And then we've talked with Brian. We've all thought about that. And Patreon came along with, and it's funny, go like, wasn't that like Kickstarter? It's like, isn't Instagram Flickr? You know,
yeah,
it's like,
right?
It's the difference. The difference is all the difference. And it's awesome. It is an awesome, awesome thing, you know, and I feel proud to know, I think you guys are, yeah, pioneers in that. And that's, you know, so cool. And I've watched the growth of, like, I have a little project, Magic Club, which I do with my buddy Jordan Gold. And we're doing a very, very just keep doing episodes, slow growth. But every week we're getting 3 or 4 more people. Every week we're watching that growth. And I told Jordan, I said, dude, it's not going to be a month from now. It's going to be overnight. It is going to be you just want to make sure that you have a long, you just keep consistently every week putting, and we're still learning our pacing on that, but we've watched it grow and grow and grow and grow. And you know, now we're at like, you know, $60 an episode or $70 an episode or something, you know, for something that's, you know, 8 weeks old, 9 weeks old. I'm thrilled. Super. And we haven't been driving the drum too much, you know, so.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, that's one of the weird parts of the early days is, yes, your first podcast is going to be your worst podcast, but you need to do it so that you have a back catalog for people to discover when your first viral hit happens. Like, more than at any other time, we see the formula of here's how to become an overnight success. Have 10 years of back catalog of episodes, and then when it hits, people will dive in. Like we were talking about when it comes to writing novels, you know, the best way to promote your old book is to release your new book. And and then when people discover your writing and fall in love, they're going to read the whole back catalog.
I know Justin has to bail out, but I'm going to make a longer point that may, do you need to go now, Justin, or?
Yeah, I'm getting called by Scott.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to just wrap this up with Brian. I've noticed, thank you, sir. One of the things that I've noticed, and I think that, and it just relates to a book I just started reading, which is good. It's like, I have a friend who's been giving us some advice on, oh, this is how you need to grow Magic Club. And I'm like, that's how you grow a YouTube channel. And I understand that. Our goal is to grow really a Patreon community, and not to say that those are exclusive, but if our focus, we're not looking at, we want to get 1 million views for Magic Club, which yes, could drive towards Patreon. We want to create this other thing where if we never top 10,000 views on our show, but we're having a really good Patreon support, that's more valuable.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, you can either go wide or deep, and what you're doing is drilling down very, very deep by creating a very exclusive environment where you are providing a service and an environment that does not exist anymore. The local Magic Club is pretty much dead. The local Magic Club used to be the place where you could learn all the deep details. You could talk to anyone. They would give you insights, and they would freely share information that will make all of your performances better. There's no analog to that in the video world. There's a couple of message forum boards where everybody speaks in coded talk that's just juvenile and dumb. And then there's Scam School is playing wide. It's like, there's a hard deck of a depth of difficulty to tricks on Scam School that I will never teach on Scam School because it exceeds what the average beginner, like, I want to minimize collateral damage. I don't want anybody to be a casual fan of Magic and watch something that is of an advanced level where all it really does is rob them of the mystery and essentially tip the method to them, but in a way that they're not going to be able to do tonight. So as a result, I have to keep the lessons all very elementary, but the flip of the other side of that is that I can send it to the entire world. I can even take out ads and say, hey, if you want to know how to, you know, make this card appear, click here. And then, and there's zero cost entry because everything is something that they could do at home. Whereas the level that you want to talk about on Magic Club is deep enough that you need that wall so that people know this is the inside stuff. This is the advanced stuff and that it doesn't belong a mile wide.
We've had, and yeah, and that's where we looked at the niche is sort of like, cause I go, okay, what are people doing really well? And I think, and like, I refer people to Scam School all the time. Cause I think you're a fantastic teacher and it's a well-produced product, great produced product. And I was thinking like, yeah, the thing that, you know, like you just said, is like, it's harder for you to go in and there would be a much tinier audience to say, let's go into the pass, you know, let's really talk more detailed about the pass. And, you know, I've had a couple people on here amazing at it. And it's a thing I play with. And then, like, I watch. I'm like, oh, man, I'll use this now. But the audience for that is small. It's, you know, anybody who gets into Magic and wants to continue it on a further level. But you got to spend 30 or 40 minutes watching a couple guys on Skype doing this to really grasp it. And that's its own little thing. So the Absolutely. Response has been wonderful. The people who've been subscribing to have been great. And it felt good to be sort of, you know, to have that kind of, yes, this is what we like. And it fills a different niche than what's out there. And we've had, the criticism we've had was somebody we both know who's into Magic, like, says, oh, I feel like you guys should be hyping this stuff up more about what the tricks are, because it doesn't feel like it's much of an appeal. And I'm like, we're not Penguin. You know, we're not trying to hype you some new trick you'll forget in a week. And we need to illustrate more. We're teaching you some cool new stuff and some fundamentals and stuff. But if you're not on board for that, we're not, you know, that's not what, we're not going to try to sell you, you know, this amazing new thing that you will forget about. You know, we're getting deep into, you know, really deep into rubber band stuff and great technique. Like, you think you know Crazy Man's handcuffs, watch Jordan teach it to you. And you're like, holy cow, you know, this is so much more into it and stuff. So, my pick, sir, is, and I just started reading this, but so far I've enjoyed it. Although it's, the authors are reading the book and,
oh dear, I think it was bold that you lost your mind. You couldn't handle Diamandis's mouth sounds.
It wasn't Diamandis who did bold though. It was the other guy.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. There was some, it's like, I'm like, listen. I'm technically an on-camera personality, done commercials, I've done voiceover work, I've done this sort of stuff. When it comes to my books, now if I were to do a nonfiction book or whatever, I might consider doing it, but I would only do that after serious consideration because I appreciate that. And I've been working, I've got, you know, Station Breakers coming out in a couple weeks, an audiobook. Guy who's doing the audio for that's fantastic. He's great. This guy's he's real. He's like the real deal. And I'm thrilled that he's going to be the voice of David Dixon. And it's going to bring a great element to it. And I have to sometimes get past that when I start listening to an audiobook. Because when I hear read by the author, I just go,
oh. Can I tell you, that's why I still have not read. Anyone who's listened to the show knows that I love the Dark Tower series. I still have not read Wind Through the Keyhole, the latest Dark Tower adventure, because when it came out, it said read by the author. And I'm like, ooh, and we're done.
It's not always a plus. And so, but anyhow, I've been listening to one, but I've got past that. And it's like, you can tell they're getting better as they get into it and all that. So, and that's a totally different audiobook. Nothing new to the one I'm about to talk to right now.
Okay.
Have you read Growth Hacking?
The Growth Hack, Hacker Marketing by Ryan Holiday, or
no,
is this a different one?
This is Hacking Growth, rather, by Sean Ellis and Morgan Brown.
Okay.
Hacking Growth, rather. I like the Holiday book. I enjoyed the Holiday book. I would say this book, Hacker Growth, is, it defines a different definition of it than I think Holiday did. And I would say that this felt a little, Holiday's book is very good, but Holiday's book felt more like, well, this is how you market in the 21st century. Hacking Growth is really about hacking and encoding for growth. Starts off with very specific examples of how, and not just like this is because like some of it in growth hacking has become this catch-all term. And I've met people like, oh, I'm a growth hacker. I'm like, oh, what are you coding? What? I'm like, well, are you just using that because it sounds cool?
He's like, yeah, man, that's my hack. That's how I hack the system.
Where this gets into and explains, like when LinkedIn said, hey, you've loaded LinkedIn, let's add everybody from your address book into LinkedIn, right? That's a growth hack. That was a piece of code designed to grow it. It was annoying, and I did not like that they did that, but I got it. Understood why. When Airbnb said, hey, they're having no traction, they wrote some code that automatically listed every Airbnb listing on Craigslist. They coded a thing and boom. And so growth hacking, as described by them, is kind of like building tools and automation and stuff for growth. Not just, hey, we got a new marketing plan. We figured out this clever thing. It's we created a piece of tech to do this.
Right.
Or came up with some sort of thing. So it's cool. But not to say it doesn't, the other parts aren't value, but I really, really enjoyed the first part of what they're getting into. I'm like, oh yeah, this is, because they also talk about like, when Facebook was trying to increase their engagement and they had to think about how do we increase our growth? Like, well, we need to go internationally. We're like 40 million in the US. We need to go internationally. Traditionally, what you would do is you would have, you know, 10-person teams for each country you want to do, who would code your site and do whatever. Facebook came up with a system where basically it could rewrite all the code on all the different sites based upon like user input. And they let the users basically interpret it and do it. And they had a much bigger, massive rollout. And you watch the curve of Facebook's growth from when they did this and after. And they put together a team of programmers and marketing and branding people together. So there were coders in the room and coders there saying, we could do this. And then you go, oh, didn't even know that. And that's how many times have you said the most simple thing to somebody and they go, that's even possible?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I like that frame of thinking. I think that's why we get really cool things. That's where, you know, the Jeff Bezoses of the world, the Larry Pages of the world, the Sergey Brins and the Elon Musk come about. They go, you know, we could do this. There's a technology way we could apply this. And all of a sudden, not everything has that answer in that. So I'm enjoying it so far.
Right on. Dude, that's fantastic.
We're good. We're good.
Dude, we're not just good. We're the best.
Yeah, we are the best. Better. Two-man show is much better.
Hey, man, keep your questions coming at us. Hit us up, neshcom@gmail.com, with the subject heading After Things. If you have a question as an independent creator, we want to answer it for you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It's been After.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.